Greetings, frog kissers. Yes, that's what I'm calling you guys now. It's my decision because I'm doing the intro alone. So this is episode number 12 with the guys from Copperpot Pictures who did the amazing I Am Big Bird I Am Big Burn. I Am Big Bird film, which we had the pleasure of having in our computer holes because we were Kickstarter backers. And all of you guys that participated, they will thank you. Don't worry, it's gonna happen. And we'll get our Blu-ray DVDs, and then we'll probably talk about that after we watch, that. We'll do another podcast just about the special stuff or whatever. I don't know. Who knows what we'll do. Next episode 13 is going to be Frog. Oh my gosh. It's gonna be Kermit Swamp Ears. Whatever comments and stuff you guys want to give us for that, I mean, you still can. That's cool. We'll answer them, but it's not going to be in that podcast because we already recorded that. So give us your other questions and comments and concerns. I don't know. Whatever. What's going on with your life? What's happening? What are you afraid of? I don't know why I felt like I just took a Marc Maron turn. Whatever you guys want to talk about, we'll probably talk about it. Let us know what you want us to hear us what talk about things, words happening, recording them, whatever. So here's episode 12. I'll shut up now. Enjoy your frog kissing time for tough pics and internet. Here's the episode. Boop, boop,
Ugh.
boop. Boop, boop, boop. Oh, it's not doing the noise. There we go. Hi.
Hello, how are you guys?
Hi, good.
Hi, good.
It's early for us.
Yeah, I know. Aren't one of you is where on the West Coast, or did I make that up?
Yeah, it's
No.
early for
Yeah.
me, Laura. It's not early for you. What are you
It's.
talking about? It's
Look.
6:30 here.
Oh, well, thank you for doing it so early and for working with us. It's tough. We've got little ones at home, so our nights are very, very packed.
Yeah, I saw your pictures when I added you guys on Google Plus just in case.
Well,
Cute
this
children.
well, yeah, they're pretty. They're
Yeah, they're all right.
I'm Dave, by the way. This is Chad.
Hello.
Hi guys. Oh look, make this a group video call. It's free. No, I don't think I will 'cause I'm not in my clothes. I'm in pajamas.
Are we
I'm
on
too.
video? No, because
You
I put.
guys are on video.
Okay, cool.
I might actually leave you guys on video if you want. For
Whatever
our
you
YouTube
want us to
version.
do is fine by me.
Okay. I'm trying to
Cool.
figure out who you sound like, because you sound like somebody and I can't figure it out.
I think it's Barry White.
No.
No?
Barry
No, not
White.
quite.
Well, you know.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll figure it out by the end
All
of it.
right.
Anyway, we have a couple of, like, preset questions, but other than that, I'd rather just kind of keep it kind of loose and whatever you guys want to talk about. That kind of
Cool.
thing.
Let's do it.
Right away, I want to get out of the way. Poor Shane. I would like to give a shout out to poor Shane that thought we were interviewing Carol Spinney. Because he was like, well, I wanted to ask Carol what it was like doing this movie and, versus doing his book. So have you guys read Carol Spinney's book?
We have not only read Carol's book, but we've also read the chapters that didn't make it into the book.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So I can actually probably answer that question a little bit for Shane.
Okay, cool.
When Carol wrote the book, there was a good amount of stuff that the editor suggested not to put in the book. They basically thought that Carol's book should be more like an "Oh, the places you'll go" type graduation,
Yeah, I
finish the
noticed that.
scene,
And when
more
I picked it
inviting.
up, it was like for graduates, and I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah,
Why not just a book? Yeah.
so Carol and Jay Milligan, who he wrote the books with credit, they did go to a lot of, they did talk about a lot of this stuff. Like the Challenger story, for example, we were just talking about this before we got on the call. The Challenger story was, I believe, in the first pass of the book, and they said they wanted to take it out, which
Oh,
is
wow.
kind of crazy. So yeah, I mean, Carol, I think Carol's experience for this has been great because, he was sort of able to say what he wanted to say and get things out
Yeah.
there. And also, I think what happened is that he trusted us because the film took so long to make, that he trusted us to sort of see in him what we thought other people would find interesting and important and get those stories out. And so it was a long process that involved us really saying to him, Carol, you know, like, we know you're not really want to talk about the divorce and, you know, that was so hard for you, but this is why we feel like it's important. Because he would tell us those things off camera, and then when we'd go on camera, it would just be a lot of, you know, this is how I got the voice sort of stuff, you know, the sort of Hollywood stories that people want to hear.
Right.
So to his credit, they trusted us to talk about some of that stuff.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
But, and because, like, I was looking at your, and I did the Kickstarter, and I think, and Julie did the Kickstarter, too.
I did, yes.
So, like, you know, we know we've been waiting for, like, 2 years.
At least.
But I was looking at the other Copperpot Pictures works, and I was like, okay, this is such kind of a departure from your stalker stuff, basically, and Sierra Leone and all that. So what was the reason for branching out so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chad and I have been very lucky in that we just make things that appeal to us. And so, like, in terms of the soccer stuff, like, one soccer thing sort of begat another one, and we would just keep doing them, which is great. It's a lot of fun. We grew up playing and everything like that. And our very first film was about, you know, a pen pal program between kids that are war orphans in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and kids living in sixth graders in housing projects in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. And they're just stories that we saw that were really fascinating to us, that we really loved. This one came about to us because, you know, Chad and I both obviously wanted to work in entertainment, and through various paths, both found ourselves in family entertainment. Family entertainment was something that always appealed to me, and so I actually interned at Sesame Workshop back in the day.
Oh, that explains it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so that's how this came about, is that I was telling a friend about it, and she told me all about Carol, who I didn't know. I asked if Carol was a woman, so that was kind of embarrassing.
Look, okay, so that's what I thought too when I was
yeah,
when
right?
I was very so, young before I knew better.
I thought it was like a
Google was around
sort of situation, you know, where it's like he's played by a woman. So that, you know, it came about, and I talked to Chad about it, and we thought, like, it was a fascinating idea for a film. And this is a long time ago this happened. So yeah.
And at the center of all the stories we tell is, if you dig deep enough, is hope. So even though the subjects may on the surface look vastly different, if you look, there's always this kind of bright lining, or are people searching for hope, or people that are hopeful for a better tomorrow, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of a unifier for most of the stuff we do.
Cool. Was it difficult to kind of get a hold of Carol to suggest making this documentary? What was, like, that process kind of like?
We were super spoiled because it was like, we had the idea. Chad was like, yeah, that's super awesome. Let's do that. And so I called, like, the one person because this was, like, years after I interned at Sesame. I called the one person I knew that was still there. She's like, oh, I'll forward it on to our PR team. And we're like, yeah, okay, that's the end of that. And within, like, a day, we got a phone call back from Ellen Lewis at Sesame Workshop. And she was like, yeah, this sounds awesome. You should come in and meet Carol. And we're like, okay. And so then, like, 2 weeks later, Carol and Deb were back in the city, and we went in. And we met with them, and we sort of pitched our little hearts out. You know, at that point, we didn't have a ton of credits to our name, honestly. And so it was like, I just hope these people trust us and they like us. And so we pitched, and they said yes pretty soon after. It was kind of a crazy experience.
Yeah. Yeah. In that meeting, Deb said, you know, I'm not sure if you guys want to look at this or not, but I've pretty much videotaped everything we've ever done. Like, would you guys want to take a look? And we were like, yeah, absolutely. And then that, along with, you know, thousands and thousands of photos, that really became the bulk of the movie, you know, getting to know them through their archival stuff, watching them grow and grow up and become who they are. We're very thankful that she had done that.
Yeah, I remember walking out of the theater thinking, like, man, how lucky were they that they had so much footage and so many pictures to work with? That's incredible that they've been documenting their life so far, and that they're still doing it to this day. It's adorable.
Yeah, I mean, we went into that meeting thinking the movie was going to be one thing based on our research and everything that we were trying to do for that meeting. And then within, like, 5 minutes, the way that the movie played out in our minds changed drastically. We thought, because Carol was a bit older, that we were going to be able to capture his last year doing Big Bird and Oscar. But within, like, the first 5 minutes of the meeting, Carol said, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years and I want to be doing it for 50. So we were like, okay, that vision of the movie is gone. And then quickly after that, that's when Deb dropped the bomb about all the archival stuff. So, and on top of that, Carol brought Oscar to the meeting. And
wow.
We're talking to Carol, and all of a sudden you look over and there Oscar pops up, and then you're all of a sudden 6 years old again. It was quite a meeting. It was pretty crazy. It was talking to him about my wife's gluten allergy and how Carol is allergic to gluten. And
Tough Picks Oscar... exclusive. Carol's Vinny's allergic to gluten.
And all of a sudden Oscar just goes boring like that. Was totally surreal and amazing. It was a great first meeting.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I say that a lot. That's awesome. But thanks are awesome. And I'm sure you guys didn't plan on like this love story that popped out of it as well. Because I mean, like, I had no idea that Deb was so, I don't know, like hands on. Obviously she's on set like all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It goes back to that meeting. In that meeting, that it's like they couldn't keep their hands off one another. They're always holding hands or they're kissing, or Carol's brushing hair, you know, hair out of her behind her ear or whatever. It's just like super romantic and awesome. They really are like teenagers. And so it was pretty obvious to us at that point, you know, they like, especially Deb keeps, Carol has a tendency to wander in his stories, and Deb will like knows all the stories, you know, forwards and backwards, and can correct him on names. It's like, it's a super adorable couple. And so, yeah, I mean, once we saw, you know, especially after Carol told us about how sort of crushed he was after his divorce, and then he met Deb, and Deb sort of changed everything for him. It was clear that she had to become an equal focus in the film. And, you know, of course, Big Bird as a character, as Laurent says at the end of the film, radiates love, and that's what he's all about. And so it was a natural fit that, again, we sort of discovered pretty early on.
Yeah, and you go through all that archival footage, and you see it, too. You know, it's one thing for us to see it in the meeting and, you know, and then maybe on film for someone to tell you about it, but you actually see it, and you see it throughout the years, which I think is really says it's really hammered home that point, really.
And honestly, that was one of my favorite parts about the whole film, is that we had all that firsthand footage, and especially the stuff with And because, like, before this movie, you didn't see hardly anything about Carol other than stuff on Sesame Street. And the same with, like, Richard and Jerry a lot of the time. And to see all that stuff of, like, just Richard fooling around, like, that was really heartwarming and really, like, you know, we still have stuff to look forward to seeing, especially about those that have passed.
Yeah, it's really cool because I think even if Carol hadn't been Big Bird, he was just some guy that documented his life, it would have been fascinating to sit there and go through all that footage. And it's just, you know, it's like watching footage of your family. Like, you know, we've discovered some old footage of my great aunt. And just watching that.
Yeah.
It's really cool to just see how people, you know, have lived and everything else. And so, yeah, it's just such an intimate way to get to know somebody. You know, everyone now is recording everything they do. But this predated that. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see, and you really get a good picture of who these people are.
Definitely.
Ryan Rowe has a question. I'm sure you guys know who he is.
We do know Ryan. He's been very supportive of us. Love the Tough Pigs guys.
They're
great.
Yeah,
so this podcast is actually for Tough Pigs.
Oh, okay.
When we started, we had this idea, and then Joe and Ryan were like, hey, you guys want to do this for us? And we're like, we'll do this together. And I was like, oh, I can't believe they asked, because I was going to ask them, but I didn't want to be like, yeah. So Ryan Rowe asked if I like how he said this, if it's not too weird for them, I'd be interested in hearing them talk about the segment that was cut from the film between the festivals and the wide release.
Sure.
I remember when the murder that was committed on Carol's property, I remember when this was in the news, but I haven't seen it. Well, obviously I didn't go to the festivals, so I don't know what you guys did with that.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, I mean, honestly, you know, Chad and I grew up in New England. And so, you know, especially I grew up in Connecticut. So locally, when the woman was murdered on Carol's property, that was a news story. You know, that probably persisted more locally than it did nationally. And so that was, you know, when you're a documentary filmmaker and you're telling the story of someone's life, and you're looking for the big events, you know, that was a big event. And I think for us, it was in the original cut of the film for a couple of reasons. One is because Carol's home is such a tranquil, wonderful place. I always describe it as Michael Jackson's Neverland without the creepy factor. And so this is a place that he and Deb have cultivated over 40 years to basically be a living, breathing extension of themselves. And so when that tranquility was shattered, it was a big, important moment in his life. To be perfectly honest, I think we maybe didn't build that sort of tranquil aspect of his house up enough to sort of pay that off in the film. But that wasn't the reason it was in the film. The reason it was in the film is because Carol and Deb's reaction to this horrible tragedy was so beautiful. Basically, on the spot where this woman was killed, they put a garden. And they reached out and have struck up a beautiful friendship with her family. And the garden has helped them heal. And so we felt like it was a beautiful moment in Carol's life that had nothing to do with Sesame Street. That was just a moment in a couple's life that demonstrated who they are. Who are you when no one's watching, right? And this was who they are when no one was watching. And we felt like it was a beautiful moment. That said, you know, and I think when we took it on the festival circuit, it was something a lot of people objected to. They felt like it was put in there for shock value.
Right.
You know, to sort of make the film more serious than it was. And it certainly wasn't put in there for shock value. It was a shocking event, and it was supposed to be a shocking event in the film because that's how it was for Carol, and we were trying to experience it as Carol and Deb did. But a lot of people sort of told us that it took them out of the film. And that was something that, you know, we didn't want people to be taken out of the film. We didn't want that to be what they were thinking about. And so when we had the opportunity to remove that scene for the domestic release, we felt like, you know, people were saying to us it wasn't necessary. They got who Carol was. And so we thought if it's taking people out of the film and it's distracting them from who Carol is, then, you know, maybe we didn't do our job as filmmakers in the way we included it, but we felt like it'd be better to be removed for the domestic release. That said, international distributors wanted to keep it in. So it is nationally.
Okay.
Interesting.
And is it something that's going to appear as a DVD extra?
It's not. And we made a decision not to put on a DVD extra because out of context like that, it did feel trivial. You know, it felt like we were trivializing a very serious event to say, here's a DVD extra, you know, like this horrible thing that happened to the
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you call that on the menu?
Right.
Exactly, too, right.
Exactly. You know, so the DVD extras are more like when Carol met Michael Jackson, that kind of stuff. And so it felt like it would trivialize it. So, you know, I'm, to be honest with you, I'm very proud of the way we handled that scene. I think it is a good scene. I think there are certain people, you know, who love it and who think it really captures who Carol is and are disappointed that it's not in the domestic release. But I think in the end, it was for the release. You know, if it took people out of the film, that's not what you're going for. So you don't want people to stop and think about how you're making the movie when you're watching the movie. So I think it was probably the right call.
Yeah, and I can see why a lot of it too, because I mean, because it would kind of be hard to segue into that, and also feeling that, you know, that to have a woman murdered on your property is such a horrifying experience in and of itself, and the garden and everything, that seems like a very wonderful thing, and that, you know, knowing that what came of it is wonderful, but as like an overall piece, and if you bring in kids to the movie and everything, that might be a little much.
We've always told people it's not a kids movie, but no matter how many times you tell
people,
they bring their kids. So
there's going to be like that 10% that don't listen and bring their kids to Avenue Q because puppets. So
Yeah, exactly.
I think Ryan has a follow up with that. I was actually looking up
because no one's asked us that. And so I think it's important to talk about because it really is. I mean, look, we've gone back and forth on it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
As, you know, as filmmakers, even it's a documentary, you do pick and choose what goes in, right? You can't put everything in. Otherwise, this movie would be, you know, 3 days long.
I would be okay with that, but
yeah. So
you guys, I don't know if the general public
right.
would.
So, you know, there's lots of other stuff that we would have loved to put in too, you know? I mean, when we were going through some of that archival footage of like the Muppet Family Christmas or and stuff like that. You wanted every single frame in the movie. You know, yeah. We thought it was all dynamite, but unfortunately, you know, you have to make tough decisions, and that scene was definitely one of them.
And trying to do, you know, 80 or, you know, 40 years of a man's life or 80 years of a man's life.
Right.
You know, 40 only being his work with the Muppets.
Yeah. And it's a lot to work with.
Having to get all that in there and so many, you know, highlights and everything.
Yeah.
Speaking of like questions you haven't been asked, Ryan's follow up was, what's the one question the audience members ask? Wait, sorry, I can't read. What's the one question they've had audience members ask of them or Carol at every Q&A, and what's the most unusual question?
Probably the one that we always get asked is, what's next?
Yeah.
All right, so we won't ask you guys that. We don't care.
The most unusual.
What was that one question about the Times Square, guys in the Times Square?
Oh, yeah, somebody asked Carol, you know, like what should be done about all the people that dress up as Sesame Street characters in Times Square. But the way he asked was bizarre.
His delivery was like a 5-minute statement.
Yeah, word vomit.
With like then another 2-minute question.
Yeah. And that was when we had the Sesame Street PR people there, and they're in the front row, and I'm like looking at them like, oh God, what, you know, what's not a great road to go down. But Carol nailed it. You know, he said they're like IP characters and they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
But it was a really weird question. You know, we've had some really wonderful exchanges from the festival thing. And, you know, like you realize Carol has touched people in a tremendous way. But there's been some really personal stories. And so, the first night we showed the film, a woman came up to us and basically said that she had been victim of a rather brutal sexual assault, and seeing what Carol has been through and how he's handled things with love made her feel like she could start to heal, which is pretty amazing. It's one of those things you don't really realize. And then there's other crazy things, like a woman came up to us the second night we showed the movie in Toronto, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, you know, my father used to, you know, was the conductor of the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, and he died, you know, when I was very young. And when I'm watching this movie and Carol's performing with him, there's my father performing with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. And I hadn't seen that. I had never seen that. I haven't seen, you know, video of my father in years. And I can't believe, she's like, I wasn't even going to come to the screening, and somebody at work gave me a ticket. And so I just happened to come, and I see my father. And so, like, of course, we think that's amazing. But so she started telling us this amazing story. And so, you know, we went, when we got back from the festival, and dug into our archival footage and just found the full performance and just sent this video of that for her father that she had never seen. So,
oh, that's awesome.
There's some pretty cool stuff like that that's happened. That's been,
yeah. What's been really amazing for me to see is how people come to the movie because Big Bird and Oscar have meant so much to them and affected their lives so much. But then when they leave, they realize that Carol the Man has also now impacted them, you know. And seeing now people coming up to Carol and saying stuff like that, like Dave just mentioned, is that's really special for me, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, and I think me and Julia were talking about this when we were talking about Frank Oz, that a lot of people don't, they always say the voice of, and it's not, you know, they don't realize what a performance and what overall all this work that has to be put into these characters.
They
kind of take the puppet, the actual puppet, and the working of the puppet for granted and kind of focus on the voice, because that's all, like, their brain can really handle. The entertainment industry has done this because the Muppets are so singular. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you interned for Sesame Street, but being on Sesame Street and being kind of there, maybe before you're interning or when you started to intern, was that kind of totally mind blowing for you as a kid? Did you guys watch Sesame Street a lot as a kid?
Yeah, of course. You know, and I will say this, we very much expected the magic to disappear. You know, once you sort of see behind the scenes and how everything works and how Big Bird works, but actually the opposite's happened, which is really cool. We were at the set, you know, in May, right before the film's release, because they were doing a Today Show piece, and so we went to hang out and sort of see how it went. And, you know, there's Carol being Big Bird. And when he's Big Bird, I mean, like, I know how it works. I everything, like, I watch him get into the legs. it doesn't make a difference. It's still like Big Bird is there in the room with you. And I think our connection to Carol has actually only made that more special and more magical. And it's like, no matter how much we go or see this or whatever, like, yeah, you can see all the line of puppeteers on the ground performing, but it doesn't matter. When you look at those puppets, they still feel real. It's very weird. And maybe it makes me sound a little naive. But it's true. It's totally how it is.
Well, like during the Q&A's, like Oscar is just sitting there, you know, his head and one arm is moving around, but the rest of him is just kind of like a pile in Carol's lap, you know, but everyone in that audience is like, man, Oscar the Grouch is alive right now in the room with me.
Yeah, that doesn't sound naive at all, because that is literally every single person's response whenever they talk about, you know, I met the performer, but then, you know, as soon as Kermit starts talking,
right? Yeah,
Steve doesn't exist.
I took my son to Sesame Place this weekend, and we went on the carousel, and it's like the Big Bird, you know, it's the Sunny Day Carousel, and Big Bird narrates it. And it's like, I get weirdly emotional now hearing Carol's voice. It's like, it's a really cool connection. It's like a deeper connection than we had before, which is already an amazingly deep connection. But that first day when you go and you see Big Bird, and it was Snuffleupagus was there, which was amazing. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's definitely... The reaction now is even more intense than it was when we first went.
Speaking of getting emotional, the part that I cried at, and I still get kind of teary thinking about it, is when, what's her name from Follow That Bird?
From Big Bird in China, Lisa.
I mean, Big Bird in China.
Yeah.
When they met her again and Deb said, "My little girl," I was gone. Tears, just all, yeah, it was, I was
me
gone.
Too. I mean, I was crying through a lot of that film because it was very sweet. But that, yeah,
well, you saw, yeah, I think the difference is, Julia, because you saw it in the theaters.
It's amazing.
I'm sorry, I spoke over you. What?
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, like, I love that moment, because that's like another one of those, this is how Carol and Deb are. This, you know, 30 years go by, and her first reaction is to say, "My little girl." Like, yeah. The love they share is amazing.
I think that we actually have a question about Big Bird in China. Yeah,
that
our friend
was my segue.
Well, I took it from you. Carolyn over at Tough Pigs said that she'd love to learn more about the Big Bird in China reunion and if they all stayed in touch after it was over.
Yeah, they totally did. So the reunion was great. You know, it was actually facilitated. You know, I think that the number we found for Lisa, I think, was on Jenny Rizzio's Carol Spinney fan page. I think that's how we got the number. It was just like, originally Lisa responded to like a comment and a post somewhere. And so like, we just tracked her that way and sent a blind text message like in the middle of the night in China, like, "Hey Lisa, this is Dave and Chad. We're doing this. You know, would you be interested in doing an interview?" And she was like, "Yeah, I would love to." And then Sesame was doing like a little retrospective, which was only internal. I don't think they ever released it.
Yeah, that's what we were asking us back and forth. I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think they ever, and I don't know that they have plans to release it. But, you know, she came in and she was basically in America for like 2 days, did the interview, went over to Sesame. We did the interview prior to her reuniting with Carol. And then she went over and she met Carol, and it was like super amazing. And, you know, then we all went out to dinner and just sort of like, you know, we just sat back while they, you know, it was like the first meeting with Carol and Deb where they're all holding hands and we're just trying to stay out of the way and just be sponges and absorb the whole thing. It was really beautiful. Yeah. They still totally stay in touch. They obviously would love to see her. But it's not super easy. So they, you know, they'll text now that Deb texts, she'll text her, you know, or they'll talk on the phone. It's really a beautiful relationship, and it was cool to be, you know, to be there when it was rekindled.
And as filmmakers, I think you guys are privy and witness to a lot of stuff like that. So, I mean, that's always pretty cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of stuff like that. That was a pretty special moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of special moments, I need to stop saying "speaking of." Anyway, Scott from Tough Pigs also asks, how fun was it including Carol dropping the F-bomb?
You know, it was funny. When you show them the process we go through is we finish the movie, And then we show it to them, and it's not like they can approve it, but you want their feedback, obviously, to make sure you get everything right. And that was like one of those bullet points that we thought they were going to be upset about, and they totally thought it was hilarious. You know, and I'll be honest, in all the footage we went through, and it was probably like 500 plus hours that I transcribe and Chad, you know, codes and logs on the computer, that might be one of the only curse words we came across.
Well, that's the only time he drops the F-bomb.
Yeah.
There were some other
S-bombs
and things.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But it's pretty funny. And it's the funnier thing is I think since the movie has come out, you know, we spent a lot of time with Carol and Deb on the festival tour. And hearing Carol tell a dirty joke every now and then is pretty awesome, too.
Yeah.
It's funny because, like, he does it once. And then in interviews, Frank Oz does it, like, every other sentence. I've seen some interviews where I think it was talking to Brian J. Jones. And he was like, oh, I'm really proud of myself. I didn't curse a whole lot in this. And Brian's no, you cursed a lot.
Frank actually swore at me.
oh my god,
because during the interview I asked a question in which I referred to him as a Muppeteer. I mean, you guys know I didn't know, so he basically I think he goes you motherfucker, and I was like, because I was already super nervous because it's Frank Oz, he's like mm-hmm. a filmmaking giant, like sort of an idol of ours, not just, you know, even away from the Muppets, and I was like, what did I do? And he explained to me, he's like, you know, like, do we have wings? Like, am I flying around? Am I some sort of magical fairy? And I was like,
what?
And like, of course, you know, he's just busting us up a little bit. And so I looked down the rest of my questions and like, you know, 70% of them have the word Muppeteer in them. So I'm like, what would you prefer to call it? I said Muppet Performer. So after that, everything was Muppet Performer. And if you see in the film, obviously everyone's credited Muppet Performer, but everyone else we've come across, totally cool with being called a Muppeteer.
Yeah,
like, I didn't even know there was some weird stigma about that either. Somebody posted on Tumblr, well, they really don't prefer to be called this. They prefer. I was like, I had no idea, really. Like, I assumed that, you know, like, from that one Jim Henson Hour episode where they kind of show everything, and that was kind of, like, my foray into the behind-the-scenes world. I was like, I swear to God, Jim said Muppeteers. No, he didn't. And there's actually, like, there's somewhere in his book, and like his, where he writes everything down, that he actually wrote down Muppeteer and then crossed it out because he thought it sounded so hokey. And
yeah,
we definitely didn't know that. That was a terrifying moment.
Yeah, Dave, you rebounded well though.
Definitely broke into a flop sweat.
Yeah, we hope to get there someday with the performers and everything like that. But I'm afraid that I would like start word vomiting like kids at Comic-Con when they meet people.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're awesome, you know, and that was one of the really wonderful joys of this project, is being able to talk. Like, I mean, Frank, you know, and after the interview, you know, I walked Frank out and I just said, you know, I just want to say thanks. You've been a huge idol of ours. Like Pico just said, you know, not only as a Muppet performer, but as a director, but I know, like, I was so nervous. I didn't sleep last night. He's like, why? I'm just a fucking guy.
Yeah.
Like, so he was cool. And Matt Vogel is amazing. You know, the ability to the opportunity to talk to Jerry Nelson was so special, and Jane Henson. It was really a, you know, interviewing one legend after another was really a special thing that we didn't take for granted.
Especially now that between, like, in that time they've since passed on, I think that was a really important part to a lot of the Muppet fans, that was kind of like almost their last interviews probably.
Seeing Jerry on set, you know, talk with Carol, which is one of the shots that is sort of toward the beginning of the film, was really cool too. Just to see him, the two of them together, sort of talking, you know, about back in the day was really cool.
Yeah, and like totally heartbreaking now because I think me and episode before last that we just put out, I think. We're just kind of talking about, well, who's still the old guard? It's just Frank. Frank's only left, right? No, that can't be true. Yeah, no, it's just Frank. He's it. And honestly, it was kind of like heartbreaking to hear Jerry talk about, well, you know, we're not going to be here that much longer, even though it was true because they're older guys, but to have that like actually be true was kind of really sad.
Yeah.
Kind of gone on weird. But, you know, also a really awesome thing to see them both just kind of sitting and chatting, and then chatting with the other gentleman that was there as well.
I think it's cool to see the younger generation of performers because, you know, like, and Matt is a great example, right? Like, Matt is totally the rightful heir to Big Bird. He's amazing. Yeah. He gets it. He's respectful. He's honoring, you know, like, believes in the traditions of the past. He's just awesome, right? And he's such a good example.
I love that you guys had him in there because I think, you know, if anybody else were doing this kind of documentary, like, Matt Vogel would be like a footnote to trying to talk about Carol all the time. But to talk about Carol, to talk about Big Bird, you know, Matt Vogel's a larger part than I think a lot of people realize.
He probably would have been a footnote if he wasn't so great, right? Like,
yeah.
we didn't expect that, you know, when you do this sort of film, you sort of expect that, oh, this is where some of the drama is going to come from. You know, this is going to be a guy who says all the right things, but you look in his eyes and you know that he really wants the job or whatever. And so, like, I mean, if we're being honest, that's what we went into the interview thinking it was going to be. And then Matt goes in and just like, oh, no, he loves Carol. He really is just there to support him. And when the time is his, he'll knock it out of the park.
Yeah, and he truly believes in the integrity of the character, like he says, you know, in the film.
So that was like a wonderful discovery.
Yeah. And he's been, you know, off and on helping, assisting Carol and doing that for like 10 years. So
it's like 15 now.
Yeah, 15.
Like 15 years. And now he's like, he's a director and he's like, is just an amazing performer in his own right. So it's like, it's really cool. Like, I feel like the next generation really are the right people to take over.
It's funny that kind of, some of us kind of think of like Joey Mazzarino and Matt Vogel as like the new guys still. But Joey's like, he's head writer and they've both been with the company for 15, 20 years.
Yeah, they've been around for so long at this
point. Yeah, and it's still funny that people still think of, you know, Steve Whitmire is new. I'm like, he's been performing Kermit almost as long as, if not longer now, than Jim did.
Yeah, it's
so
crazy.
It's very kind of strange to be a Muppet fan in that regard.
Yeah.
And that's how you call the wheat from the chaff, though, you know? the guys that know. I don't know, Julia, do you have anything?
I only have one more question, that got sent in from Nick Lee Blogs on Tumblr. They asked, did you guys ever get emotional during filming, and what's your favorite story that Carol told you?
Oh, that's good.
I don't know if we ever got emotional necessarily during filming. However, we both had children during the making of the movie, which is maybe why the movie is so emotional, because we as people became much more emotional.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of like, look, we're kind of emotional guys, I think, in general. I think we sort of realized that over the course of the movie.
I think that comes through in the movie, too.
Yeah, you know, I think that's been, you know, the movie has been pretty well received critically. The one knock is it's probably, you know, overly emotional. But guess what? Carol's overly emotional.
Yeah.
Apparently, we're overly emotional, right? And it's like, what's wrong with a feel-good movie? Nothing. Mm-hmm. So,
I think when Carol, you know, gets over his issues with his dad. For a long time, there's this one shot of him with his dad smiling and grinning. It always choked me up a little bit, actually, now that I think about it.
Aww. Yeah, actually, interviewing his kids was kind of like, you know, Carol's story is obviously emotional, but interviewing his kids, especially his son, Ben, when we wrapped up that interview, and again, we just had, you know, my son was born during our Kickstarter campaign. And so when we interviewed his son, we wrapped up that interview and looked at each other and were like, God, I hope that someday our kids look at us that way. Because the way, the look in his eyes when he talks about his dad, his eyes just, you know, they glow.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an emotional moment. I think the most emotional moment was probably seeing Carol react to the film and react to the reception in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a standing ovation and he had to, you know, take a moment sort of backstage, collect himself because he was, you know, crying. And that was a really cool experience. And then the other day, Deb called us and told us that, you know, now that the film is out and people have seen it on a wide scale and he's done this big press tour, she said that Carol told her that this was one of really the first time that what he's done in his career has actually hit him. And so to be a part of that was an emotional moment for us, I think.
And I think that, I mean, yeah, because a lot, like I said before, a lot of people just don't realize the people behind these. They kind of take it for granted that, oh, this is something that I enjoyed as a kid, and this is something that, you know, touched me as a kid. And And they kind of see that the people that they idolize are so far removed from themselves, kind of. And now, in the social media age, we can actually, you know, talk to people. And I don't know how we would have, like, interviewed you guys, you know,
right.
even 10 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And now, like, I'm looking into your living rooms. Yeah, so people that bitch about social media, you know, screw them, because it's like bringing people together and letting people know how much you've made an impact on their lives and that kind of thing. I think for even at such a small degree, that could be incredible. Like, I know that, you know, when we got a message from some girl that, you know, her dad was going through cancer, and we had, like, I don't know, 6 episodes up. And she was like, you know, hearing you guys talk about what I love really, you know, helped me through. And I'm like, holy crap, we've only done 6 episodes. I can't imagine people with, like, actual careers and, like, real work getting some type of message like that at all.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You never know, right? You do what you love, like Carol, or like you guys, and you just never really know the reach and the impact that you can have, you know, and that's partly because of social media, but partly just because, you know, when you do what you love, great things happen, you know?
Yeah. That's
yeah.
true.
So have you guys got, like, other than the woman with the, yeah, I want to hear more stories like that, the woman with her dad in the movie and all that kind of thing. Do you guys get any other amazing responses?
You know, the amount of people that have come to Carol and said things like that they were bullied or whatever, that he's helped them start to heal. You know, a common theme we have is that people, and ourselves included, see Carol and Deb together, and, you know, they just realize they can be better to their loved one, you know? So, like, we go home and, like, God, you know, like, we want to have that same love story with, you know, that Carol and Deb have. And so it's...
Oh, yeah, we'd get done with the shoot and I'd come back and give my wife a big hug and be like, you know, I love you so much.
I'm
going to be better.
Yeah. And I think it really comes through in the movie, the positive impact that Carol has and that I think the Muppets in general strives to have
mm-hmm.
is
yeah, absolutely.
Family and belonging and hope and all those
yeah.
kind of themes.
And certainly the impact Deb and Carol have on each other and, like, their relationship shines through so well in that movie.
So
it's
good
very...
job with that.
Yeah.
A+.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. And I think the only, like, criticism that we had was that it wasn't long enough. We didn't have enough time. We needed more stories, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but, I mean, other than that,
John,
just,
on the DVD
it.
And the Blu-ray, well, especially, I don't know if you guys got the Kickstarter Blu-ray.
Yep.
But there'll be some good stuff on there. One of our favorites, you know, they talk about things you can't put in the movie because there's not really a place. Carol has a great relationship with Deb's father, who is a musician. And so Carol would always perform at these Sesame Street rap parties. He'd either perform as Oscar or Big Bird. And the rap parties themselves are amazing. It's like a talent show, basically. I don't know if you guys have ever had a chance to see those somehow, but they would do these variety shows. And they were great. And so Carol... One of these performed a beautiful song that Deb's father wrote, and not only does he performs it as Big Bird with Deb's father playing, like, this white baby grand piano, and they do this amazing performance. And then not long after, Deb's father passed away, and so that video has never been seen in the public. And so that's one of those cool things that we can put on the Blu-ray that will I think people will get a kick out of.
Oh wow!
I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember there's a clip on YouTube of Louise Gold and Jerry Nelson doing, like, a Cole Porter song. And
yeah.
I was like, that's the stuff that I love to see. It's just the performers, you know, messing around and
having fun.
Being friends and all
yeah.
that cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're so talented, right? It's
true.
Great.
Overly talented, just grossly talented, everybody. This has gone really smoothly and excellent.
Well,
and
yeah.
I know that Julia unfortunately has to go pretty soon. I have a feeling we should wrap it up, but I think this was a really good interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of fun talking to you
yeah.
guys.
You guys ask good questions, some stuff
yeah.
we haven't heard. And I would be remiss because we know that your audience is definitely one that has supported us from the beginning. you know, whether on Kickstarter or social media. You know, for us, it was really a dream to be able to make this movie, and we really honestly could not have done it without Kickstarter. And the support we've had there and just getting the movie out there has been amazing. So, you know, as backers yourselves, thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners that back and support the movie in whatever way they can. Mm-hmm. And also thank you for your patience. The Kickstarter process has been a really, you know, when we started Kickstarter, it was still kind of in its infancy. And we learned some lessons, I think, probably the hard way that we've tried to communicate to everyone. So thank you guys and everyone else for your patience and support.
Well, listen, it took us, like, 4 weeks to actually plan this interview, so I think we're kind of, like, used to that. And, yeah, and the Kickstarter took a while, and I kept thinking, is it going to be this December? No, the movie's not out yet. How am I going to get the DVD before the movie's out?
Yeah, us too. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, you guys had kids and did Kickstarter in general.
You know, it wasn't even that. It was just a matter of the film was done, and this is the learning process, right? Like, we finished the film essentially on time that would have allowed us to deliver the film to Kickstarter backers. But what we hadn't accounted for, because we just had no knowledge of it, is how long distribution takes, finding the right distributor. And we've got great distribution partners, but you know, for obvious reasons, like, a distributor is not going to sign a film if it's already been released to, you know, 2,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, we were blessed in that a big distributor liked the movie enough, came along, took it on, and was able to then, you know, expand the reach beyond our wildest dreams. But yeah, a negative of that was that our hardcore group of people that are invested in the movie got serious delays in seeing the movie, which is totally unfortunate.
Yeah, well, and it's if we ever do it again, I think we would educate people a lot more, because we know now in the beginning, like, if you back this project, this is what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And we just didn't know that. And so we've tried to communicate that to the backers along the way, like, hey, we're sorry, we're giving you information in real time as we get it. And you know what? Most people are totally cool. Every once in a while you get an angry email, and if you respond to that person directly and say, hey, I'm really sorry, this is what's going on, that person is typically cool. Yeah. So we get it. It's awesome that people are passionate about it and want to see it. But yeah, if we could have avoided that, we definitely would have.
And I totally forgot what I was gonna say, because I finally figured out who you remind me of. Link from Good Mythical Morning, but without the hair.
I'm sorry, who?
Link from Good Mythical Morning. It's a YouTube show. They're actually from, like, literally, they were born like 40 minutes away from me. But yeah, it's a fun show. It's on YouTube.
All right. I will definitely check it out.
Good Mythical Morning. He's the guy with the glasses that looks like you. That's
one time in my life, I was in South Africa on a shoot, and someone told me that I reminded them of Justin Timberlake. Now, of my life, to be fair.
And I could see that.
And a lot more hair, but that's what I stick with. So, oh yeah, it's totally Justin Timberlake. Yeah,
Justin Timberlake, yeah.
There you go.
Okay, I can see that.
Just like Justin Timberlake.
That's right.
It was such a pleasure interviewing you guys, and thank you for making the movie. Yeah, and I think, I was going to say, I think Muppet fans are terribly pretty patient and everything. The people that, like, the people that, you know, do send you the knee-jerk, nasty, impatient email, you know, if you
say... those people are super passionate. I love
exactly. If you just say, you know, well, oh, I'm sorry, you know, this is the thing that's happened, usually you'll probably get back, you know, totally. Oh, okay, that's, you know, sorry, I was such a bitch or whatever.
Yeah, we try to be on the best boards and everything, so we're watching.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
good luck with your podcast.
We'll release you.
You guys did a good job with this. It was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. We'll release you back into the wild now.
All right. Thanks,
the wild
guys.
Wild of your children. All right.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Well, that was nice.
That was good.
And that's the secret of frog kissing. And you can do it too if you just listen. Just slow down.